Okay, we're continuing in the Hakdama LaPerek Chelek of the Rambam. Last week, we covered this section Bet, at least according to the Shilat edition, which deals with the topic of Torah Lishma. Does anyone recall how the Rambam got onto the topic of Torah Lishma? Or in other words, let me phrase it this way. Most people are aware that the Hakdama LaPerek Chelek is the enumeration of the Rambam's 13 principles of faith. If they know anything at all about it, they know that's where the Rambam came up with this idea that there are 13 cardinal principles of faith. That actually occupies the end of the work. And there's this long run-up to that where the Rambam covers an array of different topics that are all interconnected like beads on a string, one to the next, leading one to the next, to the next, to the next, until we get to this notion of the 13 cardinal principles of faith. The Rambam opened in the first section with the five mistaken conceptions of what Olam Haba is. And now the Rambam gets on to a discussion of Lishma, of Torah Lishma, of doing mitzvot Lishma, of proper motivation. How did he get onto this topic? What's the connection between topic A and topic B? Does anyone recall, or can anyone try to articulate the connection between the two? Again, the first topic being the mistaken notions about Olam Haba, and the second topic being the notion of Torah Lishma, or acting out of the proper motivations for Avodat Hashem, as opposed to the improper motivations or negative motivations for Avodat Hashem. Okay, raise your hand, send in a chat, speak up into your microphone, and let me know your thoughts on the connection between these two topics. I'll give you another 15 seconds while somebody plays that Jeopardy music in the background. No, come on. So this is not meant to be entertainment. It may be entertaining, but it's not meant to be entertainment. You might have to actually think between week to week. Before I'll give the answer, unless somebody else jumps in, I'll point out that earlier in the week, I sent you a link to a translation of the Rambam's Introduction to the Guide to the Perplexed. That's for next week. I wanted to give you some lead time. I really suggest you read over that in advance of next week's shiur, either through the email or through going into the website and downloading it from there. Or if you prefer, of course, you could read it in Hebrew, in one of the Hebrew editions. Links to those online are available through the website. Or in the newer English edition, the edition translated by Shlomo Pinas, the two-volume one, which I think I showed you earlier. The material that I sent you is from an earlier edition, which is in the public domain, and on the available on the internet. Jay mentions in the I sent you the link earlier in the week by email. Jay mentioned in the email, he's speaking telegraphically, but I assume that he has the right answer. I'll expand it for you in a second. Ahead. Okay, I'm now turning on the recorder. Ahead, I don't know why I didn't go on. Okay. Before I get into that, let me just answer Chaim's question. No, I sent a link to the online. There is one of the edition. There were two translations of the Guide to the Perplexed into English. one by Friedhandler, which is in the public domain and is available online through Wikitexts. On the Web Yeshiva website, there's a link to online Svarim. Maybe, Alan, you can put that up into the link, if you don't mind, if you're able to do that. There's a link from the bottom of the homepage that says Online Svarim, and there's a roundup of different links to online Torah resources, including the Mor Nevuchim in Hebrew, as well as the Mor Nevuchim in this earlier English translation. There's a better English translation available, but that's not in the public domain, and it's not available online. That's the two-volume edition put out by the University of Chicago. Thanks, Alan, for that link. The two-volume edition by the University of Chicago, translated by Shlomo Pines, P-I-N-E-S, and that is available from Amazon.com if you want to purchase it. Again, let's go back for a second. Jay, I think, correctly points out that the first section, the Rambam puts forth this notion of mistaken conceptions of Olam Haba. He's going to have to correct us and tell us give us the skinny, give us the real story. But before he does that, he makes a point to say that he finds the whole discussion about what Olam Haba will be like to be somewhat distracting from the point of view of Avodat Hashem, because it takes our eye off the ball, and it causes us to think more about the reward than about the actual Avodat Hashem. Now this is important. There are, and that's how he gets into the topic of Torah Lishma, about acting out of service to God. Sometimes when we talk about Torah Lishma, we're talking specifically about learning, the study of Torah. But here, it's more globally defined as the entire life of Torah, of doing mitzvot, of serving God, Lishma. So here, throughout, when I talk about Torah Lishma, when I just use that shorthand phrase, Torah Lishma, I'm talking globally, not specifically about the notion of learning Torah, but about all of the mitzvot and the entire religious life. Parenthetically, if anybody's really interested in this topic, there's a really good book called Torah Lishma by Rabbi Norman Lamb. I'm sure it's also available on Amazon or online, and that's exploring the notion of Torah Lishma, particularly in the thought of Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner, the Nefesh HaChaim, that great giant of Lithuanian Torah, who really developed this idea. Torah Lishma is, we have to think of it differently than some other things. So for example, if you want to get from point A to point B, if you want to get from Minsk to Pinsk, and you have a donkey or a horse, and you hitch him up to your wagon, you can either get him to move with the carrot, or you can get him to move with the stick. And we might metaphorically think of those two things as acting me'ahava or acting me'ira, although it's an imperfect metaphor. Sometimes we're motivated by a desire to do something which is going to generate some type of positive reinforcement, the carrot. And sometimes we're motivated to do the right thing out of fear of punishment, yira. There are these two emotions. However, both of these are imprecise when thinking about the life of Torah Lishma. For Torah Lishma, for the service of God, it's almost the journey itself that's of value. There's no particular value in the journey of getting from point A to point B, of getting from Minsk to Pinsk. And on the contrary, if we, you know, lived in the world of Star Trek, we wouldn't hook up our horses to wagons. We'd just transport from here to there. It saves a lot of time. It saves a lot of energy. It saves a lot of effort. But getting there is as Tilo Leia points out, it's but no fun. But it's much more efficient. And most people, when they're traveling, except for the pleasure of traveling, if they're traveling because they're going for business or they're going from here or there, that's why people travel, that's why people like to fly business, because it takes the pain out of the travel. And if they could fly first class, they'd fly first class, and if they could just transport from here to there instantaneously, they would choose to do that as well, because a lot of traveling isn't so much fun. But in Avodas Hashem, the actual avodah is the essence. And the ultimate reward, or God forbid, the punishment for lack of serving God, shouldn't be confused with the essence. And that's what the Rambam discussed here, and which we spent some time with last week. I want to look, I promised that we would try to correlate what the Rambam says here in the Perush HaMishnayot, which again, the Perush HaMishnayot is an early work. It's the work of his youth, with the later writings, here the Hilchot Tshuva. Again, the Hilchot Tshuva is the concluding section of the first volume of the 14 volumes of the Mishneh Torah, Sefer Mada, the book of knowledge, the book of wisdom, the great philosophical halachic work or halachic philosophical work that opens the Mishneh Torah, the work which so many contemporaries of the Rambam and those that came in the generations immediately following found very puzzling, because halachic works didn't generally traffic in the philosophical realm. And the Rambam's synthesizing philosophy and halakha together, sometimes with the philosophy more prominent, sometimes with the halakha more prominent, is the innovation of the Mishneh Torah. If people are interested in that particular topic, how the Rambam did this, read the very lengthy but essential sixth chapter of Rabbi Isidore Twersky's Introduction to the Code of Maimonides. I think I must have pointed it out to you in an earlier session. Also, I'm sure, available on Amazon. Introduction to the Code of Maimonides by Isidore Twersky, T-W-E-R-S-K-Y. Rabbi Yitzchak Twersky, published under the name Isidore Twersky. The sixth chapter there, which is called Law and Philosophy, deals with this question of how the Rambam wove together these two realms into one work. But clearly the Sefer Mada is predominantly a work which, you know, on its surface reads like a philosophical work. And it ends with Hilchot Tshuva, and Hilchot Tshuva ends with the 10th chapter. There are those that said, apparently Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, the Rav's grandfather, famously said that the Rambam intentionally divided the Hilchot Tshuva into 10 chapters, so that there would be one chapter to correspond to each of the Aseret Yimei Tshuva between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And there's this widespread custom that people have to learn one chapter of the Hilchot Tshuva every day of the Aseret Yimei Tshuva. I think that maybe some of you in the past, that we've learned this together, as a matter of fact, I think the very first shir on Web Yeshiva, I don't know if we have it recorded in the archives, the very first shir on Web Yeshiva over 2 years ago was a shir that I delivered on Hilchot Tshuva of the Rambam. And I'm sure this is a review for some people, but since it's the Rambam's fullest articulation, or most mature articulation, or his most distilled version of his treatment of Torah Lishma, it's worthy of our attention here. And it's interesting, and I'd be interested in hearing from any of you, either now or by email, why the Rambam ends the entire Sefer Maddah with this discussion of Torah Lashma. So the Rambam says in Halacha Aleph, Al Yomar Adam Hareini Oseh Mitzvot HaTorah VeOsek B'Chochmata Kedei SheYakabel Kol HaBrachot HaKtuvot Ba. A person should not say that he's doing any of the mitzvot or dealing in the wisdom of the Torah in order to get the brachot or the rewards that the Torah itself promises. There's a paradox. The Torah says, if you keep the Torah, you're going to get these rewards. And if you violate the Torah, you're going to get these punishments. It's like built in. And the Rambam says you shouldn't do it to get the reward that it, the Torah itself, specifies you will get. Because it's like saying, you go to the store, and now every package in the store tells you how healthy the food is, how much fiber it has, and how much vitamin C it has, and how low fat it is, and how it's not only low cholesterol, it's anti-cholesterol, it'll eat up all your cholesterol, but only the bad cholesterol, and it'll give you better good cholesterol, and all those things, and you eat it, and you say, I'm eating it because it's delicious, not because it's good for me. It sounds like a commercial. It sounds like, you know, on Madison Avenue, people are trying to figure out commercials that sound like this. I eat it because it's so tasty. I eat it because it's so tasty, not because of the ultimate reward that it's going to be healthy for me. Neither should a person do the Torah and the mitzvot kedei she'ezkeh l'chayolam haba. And here the Rambam says it explicitly. Neither should you do the mitzvot in order to get olam haba. And neither should you afrosh mina averot sheis hira Torah mehem kadesh netzel min haklalot haketuvot b'Torah kadesh lo akaret mechayel mamba. And similarly you shouldn't do it in order to avoid punishment or in order to avoid the ultimate punishment of being cut off from olam haba. Ein roi la'avod et Hashem al derech hazeh. It is improper to serve God in this manner. Sha'oved al derech zeh hu oved mi yira. Mi'yira, because this type of service of God is service motivated by fear. Ve'ena ma'alat hanvi'im ve'lo ma'alat hachachamim ve'ein ovdim Hashem al derech ze ela amei ha'aretz, and only people of ignoramuses would serve God out of this type of motivation. It is not the ma'alat hanavim, the degree, the level of a navi. Again, a navi for the Rambam is the epitome of the adam hashalim, a person who has perfected his personality, who has tuned his midot, his character traits, so that he becomes a receptor of nivuah, and neither is it the characteristic of a chacham. A chacham is not like a navi. A chacham is a wonderful thing, and halavai we should all be chachamim. But it's a different madriga. And the Rambam there then says something about children. We remember what he said last week at the beginning of the second section of the Hakdama LaPerek Chelek, the metaphor of the child having to be educated from external motivation to intrinsic motivation. First we say if you do it you'll get a candy, then we upgrade the rewards, and hopefully we then liberate the student or the learner or the person from acting out of motivations for tangible rewards. The Rambam also says here something about women. I'm going to skip over that because it'll take us far afield. I don't think that he means what it might appear to mean, and neither should it be viewed as exceedingly misogynistic, because women are listed here with children and with Ame Haaretz. But I'm gonna skip that. But he does point out that people that serve Hashem out of fear have to be weaned off of that. Ad shetirbed atan v'yavdu me'ahava. That serving God out of fear is something that with increased knowledge, with increased wisdom, you could be weaned away from, and you could be drawn over to ahava. And this reflects, the footnote should jump out at you, that this is what he's describing in the metaphor of the child being motivated by candy, by nuts. Imagine getting a kid to do anything for a walnut, but by doing it for candy, or doing it for clothing, or doing it for money, or doing it for honor, you have to be weaned off of that and moved over from Yira to Ahava. But Ahava, serving God out of love, the Rambam is clear, is not the default position. It doesn't happen automatically. It doesn't happen automatically. It's something that only a mature person comes to, having been trained and oriented in that direction. Let me just see what Sherry had said. Sherry writes, couldn't it be because if you're motivated by reward, then you miss something about the experience of the mitzvah? Yeah, I think precisely. You've hit the nail on the head. And I think that's what he means in his critique of, what I describe, these are my words, not the Rambam's, this idea that the whole discussion about reward takes our eye off the ball. It's spiritually distracting. Instead of doing the mitzvah, you get caught up in these other factors, either the fear factor or the reward factor. And he's going to expand on this as we move along. Halacha bet ha'oved mi'ahava osek b'torah v'mitzvah v'holech b'netivot ha'chma lo mipnei davar ba'olam v'lo mipnei yirat hara'a v'lo kedei liyarsha tova. A person who serves God out of love doesn't do it because of desire for this or fear of that. Ela osei ha'emet mipnei shehu emet. Rather, you do the truth because it is true. Now, this is an interesting formulation, right? You do truth. Generally, we think of truth as an objective descriptor. Truth is the opposite of falsehood. So there might be all types of things which are morally neutral, or even morally repugnant, but are true. So, for example, if I say this piece of paper is yellow, that's true. If I say that this disc is round, that's true. But those are morally neutral statements. They don't mean anything about, identity, about values, about the service of God. They're just true. And similarly, if I were to say that, this pen is red, that's false. And then there are certain statements which are true, but they don't represent positive things. This fellow in Texas killed those 10 people, that's true. But that doesn't make it nice. If I make a statement that there was a Holocaust in the 1940s in Europe and 6 million Jews died, among them 1.5 million children, Jewish people died, in addition to lots of millions of other people that died in World War II. That's true, but that doesn't make it a like a morally positive statement beyond the fact that it represents something that is important to know, particularly in light of the fact that there are people that don't accept that as true. But it's not the same as saying, I love my children, which is true and also positive. So it's kind of strange when the Rambam says, Osei ha'emet, you don't do truth, right? We say you can do good, right? We might have expected the Rambam to say, Osei ha'tov, mipnei shehu tov, that you should do what's right. You should do what's good because it's inherently good and it's inherently right. What does it mean to say that we do the truth? What might that mean for the Rambam? No? Inner truth. I don't know what inner truth means. I mean, this is not a class in Kabbalah. Okay, look, everybody should think about this. Okay. Everybody should think, I mean, Tehila Leah is thinking about this, I see. But everybody should think about this and either email me, and email me your thoughts on this matter. I'll just remind you of my email. So again, the Rambam says, think about this question. We'll come back to it, or we'll come back to it next week. So the Rambam says you shouldn't be motivated by anything else, but you should do it the truth because it's true. V'sof ha'tova lavo b'glala, and if you get a reward in the end, you get a reward in the end. I'll repeat the question. I'll repeat the homework assignment, as it were, at the end, Sherry. And this is what Ve'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha means, what we say in Kriyat Shema. U'bizman she'ahov adam et Hashem ahava haruya miyad yaseh kol ha'mitzvot mi'ahava. And if you, what does it mean to be motivated by love? It means that when you really properly love Hashem, a proper love, when you have the feeling that the Torah desires that you should have for God, then doing the mitzvot out of love is the natural consequence of that. The Rambam describes this in the Shmona Prakim. In the Shmona Prakim, again, the Shmona Prakim is the Rambam's introductory essay to Pirkei Avot, where he describes his whole personality theory. This is also part of the Perush HaMishnah. It's from the same period as the work that we're looking at, the Hakdamah, the Perek Chelek. It's again a work of his youth. And here in the fifth of the eight chapters, he describes this, the degree to which a person can use the force of his personality, Letzad Tachlit Achat, the degree to which a person can sharpen his himself, his personality, his... Again, for the Rambam, personality is this combination of intellect and what we call personality traits, or what we colloquially call, today, midot, or midos. The Rambam uses midot to describe something else. The Rambam... excuse me. The Rambam uses the term midot to describe more the intellectual character. Deot, rather. So this idea that you can become... that you can become focused on something so that everything that you do is an outgrowth of that. So the Rambam describes that here in this fifth chapter. Maybe we'll just... He says, here towards the end, we don't have time to do the whole thing. Oh, one second. Am I having trouble here? Oh, here we go. Vidash zot hamadrega, that somebody that reaches the level of this type of laser beam focus, of motivation, of everything that you're doing is an outgrowth of trying to emulate God, of loving God. This is a madriga elyona ma'od, the chamuda. It is a very, very high level, desirous level. Lo yasiguhu ela ma'at mizair, and only a few people will reach this. Now, this is an interesting idea. The Rambam was criticized for being some type of elitist, for putting forth certain goals that the masses could not achieve, and for being blunt about the fact that not everybody was going to get there. But yet the Rambam was also very much egalitarian. Even though not everybody was going to make it to the pinnacle, not everybody was going to become a Navi, not everybody was going to be Moshe Rabbeinu, everybody has the potential to be as righteous as Moshe Rabbeinu. Everybody has the potential, if they only work on themselves properly, to achieve spiritual greatness. And the people that will get it, the minority that will achieve it, doesn't mean that everybody else isn't still obligated. Again, this idea being that the journey itself is important, even if you don't achieve the highest high. But being on the path, being moving in that direction, is the goal. Ukishetazmin mitziota adam shezein yano, ani omer shehu lamata min hanevi'im, betzoni lomar sheyishamesh kochot, hold on a second, kochot nafsho kulam, v'yasim tachlitam v'yidiyat Hashem yitbarach levad. To be motivated purely by the desire to know Hashem. Again, remember, the Sefer Mada opens with the idea that the Yesod HaYesodot V'Amud HaChachamot, the foundation and pillar of everything, is knowing God. V'lo yase ma'ase katan o gadol, v'lo yidaber davar ela she'apol ahu hu hadavar o hadavar hu mevi lema'ala o lemashe mevi el ma'ala. V'hu yachshov yistakel b'chol pa'al tnu'a v'yura'im yavi el hatachlit ahi. So if you're really motivated by a desire to know God, then everything that you do will be directed towards that goal. How you act with people, how you treat yourself, how you take care of yourself, your health, how you use your leisure time, how you interact with nature, everything will be an attempt to further that more global goal. And that's the pasuk in Mishlei, b'chol derecheha dehu. In all of your ways, you should, in everything that you do, in every component of your life, we should be seeking to know Hashem. Halacha Gimel, going back to the Hilchot Tshuva, the Rambam says that the proper love is a very intense love. Ahava gdola yitera azam od, a strong, powerful love. Achtei nafsho kshua ba'avat Hashem. Until your soul is completely bound up with this love of God. V'nimtza shogeba tamid. Kiilu chole 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 ahava. Right? And he makes a metaphor to romantic love, to erotic love. She'ein da'ato pnuya ma'avat ota isha, v'hu shoge batamid. Like when you fall in love. I mean, you know, if you're married, I'm just trying to look at a list, and many of you are married. If you're married, so, you know, you've been married however many years, you're still in love. But it's a more mature love. In some ways, it's a better love than the kind of young romantic love, the love of being completely, you know, thinking about it all the time. I remember when I was in college, I had a roommate who was engaged, and they would be on the phone all night. And in the morning, they would discover that they had fallen asleep while on the phone, so that in the morning they'd wake up and the line was still connected. And in the morning, you'd hear her, you know, like calling over the phone to him after they'd both fallen asleep, you know, while talking. That kind of, you know, intense young romance. You know, after a few years, that fades and it matures into a different type of. So the Rambam is building a metaphor to say it's that kind of romantic love. The metaphor of husband and wife is, of course, well known to us, particularly from Shir Hashirim, which is this allegory for Hashem's relationship with Bnei Yisrael in the form of an allegory of romantic love. There's, of course, a different type of love which Chazal and the Chachamim and the Rishonim and the Achronim also use as a metaphor for the love of Bnei Yisrael for God and God for Bnei Yisrael, and that is the love of parent and child. Even though generally in that metaphor, Bnei Yisrael are the children, because we're obviously more dependent on him, who the metaphor is the parent, it's also possible to think of it the other way around. The Rabbi Soloveitchik famously described here in a different context, in the context of our relationship to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, but it applies globally also to a discussion of Avat Hashem. He described, and here perhaps in order to balance out the earlier comment that the Rambam made about women, he used it in the metaphor of a mother, of a nursing mother particularly, of a new baby. You know, when you have a new baby, there's never a moment when you're not thinking about the baby, particularly for a nursing mother who literally, you know, is constantly, her whole body is constantly attuned to the child, and she can literally feel the milk coming in, knowing that it's time to feed the baby, and is the baby hungry, and it's it. There's this connection where the two, mother and child, having had been physically linked in a most intimate way for 9 months, retain a physical connection, a consciousness that the mother has for the child even after having given birth. And there's never a moment where, you know, she forgets that she has a baby. Maybe a husband, you can imagine, goes off to work and you know, for a moment here, a moment there, it's not in the forefront of his consciousness. It's on the back burner. But for the young nursing mother, there's never a moment when her consciousness is free of the thought of that baby. And that's another type of metaphor that we sometimes see. Interestingly, the Rambam doesn't choose that one here. He chooses the metaphor of romantic love, but there are other ways to think of it as well. That's what Ahavat Hashem is, where it's always there, front and center in the consciousness. And the Rambam here says that Kol Shir Hashirim Mashal Hu Le'inyan Zeh, that Shir Hashirim is a metaphor for this whole thing. In Halacha Dalid, he points out, Amru Chachamim Arishonim, Shema Tomar Hareini Lamei Torah Bishvil Sheh Ashir Bishvil Sheh Ekra Rabbi Bishvil Shekabel Sechar Bolam Haba. Talmud Lomar Lavat Hashem Koma Shetem Osim Lo Tasu Ela Me'ava. This is almost word for word parallels what he had said, what we'd seen earlier. He says there are all types of motivations for why you would learn Torah, why you would do mitzvot. All types of motivations, honor, glory, profession. Somebody might study Torah in order to become a rabbi, in order to become a teacher. No, you should do it out of love, not out of anything else. V'od amru chachamim b'mitzvotav chafetz ma'od. This is a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. B'mitzvotav chafetz ma'od, lo b'schar mitzvotav. Right? You want the mitzvot. You don't care about the reward. There's a story, we talked about this, I think, a few weeks ago, maybe, when we were learning Masechet Sukkah. I think we might have discussed this. There was a story that the Vilna Gaon who lived in the 18th century, and lived in, of course, in Vilna, in what's today Lithuania, in a, you know, the pretty northern latitudes, it was very difficult to obtain the Arba Minim, the Lulav and Esrog, and the four species for Sukkot, because they all had to be imported from warmer climates. I think the northernmost that a Lulav or an Esrog grows are Turkey, northern Italy. So there was one year when the Gura, or the Vilna Gaon, could not obtain hadassim. They were just simply not to be had. And I think Rabbi Soloveitchik mentions this in the Ish HaAlacha. I'm not certain. The hadassim, they were just simply not to be had. He couldn't find them. There was one woman in Vilna who had them, who had hadassim, and she wouldn't sell at any price. So the Vilna Gaon goes, he was very poor, the Gura, he didn't have a lot of money, but he goes and he begs her to sell him the hadassim so he can do the mitzvah of lulav and etrog. And she says, Rabbi, all the money in the world, all the tea in China, I won't sell you these hadassim. So he says, isn't there nothing I can give you? So she says, well, I tell you what, I'll give you the hadassim if you trade for me the schar mitzvah. So that you'll shake the lulav, but I will get the reward that the Vilna Gaon, the holiest Jew like of his generation, perhaps of many generations, I'll get the reward for you shaking the lulav. So the Vilna Gaon said, Bevakasha, I'd be glad to. I'll trade that for you easily. So they made this deal. Maybe she thought she was making some type of Faustian bargain with him. I don't know. So they make this deal, and the students say to the Gra, Rebbe, how could you do this? So he said, no. Finally, I can do a mitzvah lishma, because I've already sold off any reward. When do you ever get to do a mitzvah and be certain that you're not motivated by reward? This was the case when you could do it only out of ahava, having given up any reward, as it were. The Rambam goes on, in Halacha Hey, he makes a caveat. He says, nevertheless, kol ha'osek b'torah kedei lekabel sechar, kedei shelo tagi ela puranut. Anybody that does the mitzvot in order to get reward or to avoid punishment, hareze osek shelo lishma. V'chol ha'osek bo lo liira v'lo lekabel sechar ela mipnei ahavat adon kol ha'aretz, shetziva ba hareze osek ba lishma. So the definition of what shelo lishma is, what the definition of lishma is. But you know what? Shelo lishma. Halavai, we should all do mitzvot shelo lishma. I mean, halavai, we should do them all lishma. But if everybody were to do all the mitzvot, even shelo lishma, we'd be doing pretty well. Because Amru Chachamim, the Chazal said in Masechet Pesachim, Le'olam yasok adam b'torah, hafilu shelo lishma. You should always do the mitzvot, even if it's not lishma. Shemitoch shelo lishma, ba lishma. Because if you act out of a not perfect motivation, that generally speaking leads somebody to act out of a pure motivation. Chazal had this notion that, like, you know, if you make an attempt to do the right thing, even if it's not perfect, so Hashem helps you out. He helps you out. You give him a little, you give him an inch, he'll take a yard, as it were. But here in the opposite the meaning of that expression, in the felicitous phrase of the Midrash, Pitchu li petach ke pitcho shel machat, open up like the eye of a needle, Hashem will open it up, open your heart like a whole stadium, as it were. Lefichach, kishemalamdim et haketanim ve'et ha'nashim v'chlal ha'me'aretz, en malamdim otan ela la'avod mi'ira v'kedei lekabel sechar. So again, he echoes what he said in the Hakdama la'perish ha'mishnah, in the Hakdama la'perish chelek, that pedagogically speaking, first you have to start off with the improper motives, and then you wean them off of that and you work up to the proper motives. Halacha Vav, he returns to the ideal. Halacha Vav, he returns to the ideal. And again, Halacha Vav, this is the end. This is the end of Hilchot Tshuva. It's the end of Sefer Mada. It's the end of the discussion, the guidebook for how to perfect yourself, as it were. What the proper beliefs are, what the proper personality traits are, how to use Talmud Torah as a path towards understanding Hashem, etc., etc. The entirety of the Sefer Mada comes down to this. Davar yedua varur she'ein avat HaKadosh Baruch Hu nekshert b'libo shel adam ad sheyishkeh batamid. The love of God, which again is both the goal and the motivator for Torah Lishma, that the love of God only attaches itself, it only resides in the heart once you are constantly engaged with it. V'yazov kol ma sheba olam chutz mimena. and you can only be focused on that, like he indicated in the Shmona Prakim. Kemosh Tziva v'amar b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha eino oiv HaKadosh Baruch Hu ela b'dat shiyadehu. You can only love God according to, in proportion to, the degree to which you know God. In other words, if earlier he used the metaphor of romantic love, here he refines that. Romantic love, think about it, at least you married folks. Romantic love, like when it was all, you know, crazy and goo-goo and gaga and pitter-pat of your heart, and you felt your palms sweat. Think about it. You didn't really know your spouse all that well back then. Now, you know, I'm married now, how many years? 14 years, right? So I think now, you know, I still love my wife, don't get me wrong. But it's not the same type of... goo goo gaga. I hope you know what I mean by those technical terms. That it was like when we were engaged. It's a more mature love. But now I think I know her so much better. I hardly knew her then. And now, after all these years and all these experiences and all these other things, we've grown so much closer. We know each other so much more. So here, the Rambam, I think, is modifying the metaphor. All metaphors are imperfect. That'll actually be our next topic. So here he's saying that that love is a function of the degree to which you know Hashem. V'al pi adeya tiye ahava im ma'at ma'at v'im harbe harbe. You could only love God as much as you know Him. If a little, a little. If a lot, a lot. And therefore, a person has to dedicate himself to know God, to study God, to learn God. But when the Rambam had said a sentence earlier that you have to ya'azov kol ma sheba'olam chutz mimena, you have to leave everything aside. Don't misunderstand that. He's not talking about some type of monastic life. For the Rambam, the knowledge of God was very broad, is very broad, and includes all types of realms. It includes the sciences, and it includes nature, and it includes the way we interact with each other. Knowing God is also a function of interacting with other people. For the Rambam, he spells out in Hilchot Deot, earlier in Sefer Mada, that for the Rambam, knowing God is also a function of interacting in society. We don't believe that a person can like go off and be a yogi sitting up on a mountain contemplating, you know, the secrets of life. That's not the Jewish view. That life is in society. Torah is in society. It's in the interactions with other human beings. So you have to understand this idea of leaving other things, anything at all which is a distraction from knowing and loving God. But knowing and loving God is also about knowing and loving the world in which we are situated. This is actually the theme of Rabbi Soloveitchik's Ish HaHalacha, the degree to which the halacha is a roadmap in this world, for the actualization of our task as Ovdei Hashem. This is the Rambam's presentation of Torah Lishma. Of Torah Lishma. Again, earlier the Rambam had mentioned this idea of Oseh HaEmet Mipnei Shehu Emet in Halacha Bet, chapter 10, Halacha Bet. This is what I'm repeating. So it's a strange thing. We might have thought that he would say that one should do the good because it's good. You should do what's right because it's right. Right? That's like a kind of thing you might tell your children, or you might have been told as a child. Right? You should do X, Y, Z. Well, why do I have to do that? Because it's the right thing to do. Or because it's a good thing to do. Those are adjectives that describe like a state of things. Good as opposed to bad. You shouldn't do bad things. Right as opposed to wrong. You shouldn't do wrong things. But what does it mean to do truth? What does it mean to do truth? So if anybody has any thoughts on that, I would welcome your insights by email, by Google Chat, by whatever it is. But also for next week, please read the introduction that I sent out, or at least a part of the introduction that I sent out, and which is also available from our Shir homepage, the Rambam's introduction to the Mor Nevuchim, the God of the Perplexed, where he describes, which is the next topic is how Chazal formulated their ideas. Chazal, very often, the sages, the rabbis of the Gemara, that is, the Gemara, the Midrash, formulated their ideas, encapsulated their ideas in mishalim, in a type of metaphor. Why did they do that? Why didn't they just come out and say what they wanted to say? Why did they encapsulate ideas in agadot, in midrashim, in metaphorical language? What was the purpose of that whole style? So the entire Guide for the Perplexed, actually, that question, the mechanics of language, even the mechanics of the language of the Torah, but also the mechanics of the language of Chazal, is the opening question. That's what perplexed the perplexed student, apparently, so much, and that is the opening salvo in the Guide to the Perplexed, which is why I wanted you to read that for next week, and we'll look at what the Rambam has to say on this in the third section of the Hakdama, the Perek Chelek. Okay? Laila Tov.